Wait, did I mention that I was in Europe? There was an Elvis sighting there, so I figured I'd check it out, but it was just a fat guy in a sequined suit. I took him anyway.
Is this guy boring or what? All he ever talks about is himself. I gotta remember that the next time he comes to town and wants to get together.
Welcome to the Crypt Keeper's Coffin, a Tales from the Crypt retrospective brought to you by Bat and Spider. Episode 76, The Assassin.
Most uncreative name for an episode so far?
I mean, the last 20 episodes have been the something.
The something, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the assassin. Well, I mean, they didn't have much to work with, but they couldn't have just, like, taken an, you know, like they do other times, is taken an interesting title from a show that has nothing to do with this one and just move it over.
What was, in your opinion, what was the most egregious thing that Corey Feldman said this episode?
Well, I would say it wasn't something he said, but I went back and rewatched it a bunch of times, and I'm glad it wasn't what I thought it was. So when he gets behind the main character in the treadmill,
yeah,
I thought he was licking his hand before he does what he does. But I think he was just wiping his nose. I could be wrong. He could have been licking his hand.
You had to go back and check the tapes.
Well, I was pulling clips, and I got to that, and I was like, I get it. Did he really do that? Because it chilled me to my core. It filled me with dread, utter dread. But if I had to pick one thing, maybe it was his line about women always bleeding on the furniture.
Oh my God! Yeah, I forgot about that one.
Is this the point? Is this the point where Corey stopped being the Corey we love, and he became the guy that we know him as now? Was it this episode?
This was this turning.
It's the dividing line.
It wasn't Meatballs 4. It was this.
I'm sure Meatballs 4 is much more fun.
For me.
Mm-hmm, say it.
This is 1994, say. He says in his opinion, kitchen carpeting is what really works. It's what's really in nowadays. And I just couldn't.
He said that?
He said ceramic tiles out. Kitchen carpeting is in.
That's horrifying.
Who says that?
I don't know. This house, when we moved in here, the downstairs powder room bathroom had carpet in it. I mean, that taking that out, that was a whole, like, just hazmat suit situation.
Oh, please.
You know what I'm saying? I even got the glue tested underneath the rug, because you know how sometimes glue has that old glue has what's that bad stuff in it? Asbestos? So I took a sample and sent it off to the lab before I messed with it. It was safe.
I don't even know what you like. How does a civilian send something to the lab to get tested? And what are you testing it for?
For asbestos. That's what we're testing it for. The glue. Because it's black glue. I wouldn't have known this. I think Melissa knew this. She knew if you saw black glue under old carpet or old tile, you know, kitchen room linoleum. Kitchen room. Hey, you want to go hang out in my kitchen room?
Right. It's got linoleum in it.
There's a good... there's a chance that it's got bad stuff in it. So you don't want to... You know, you don't want to sand it up. You know, that's what you do a lot of time. To, you know, you sand the floor. So, like, you don't want that throwing asbestos up in the air, you know.
Right.
This is so boring.
But you're still not...
Okay, what do you want to... Okay, not... I think I went to Amazon and I ordered a kit. A test kit. And then you bag up a sample and mail it off to this lab. And they send you an email back.
I'm stunned. Wow. Okay, well, I mean, that's a little better to know that you could just get a test kit on Amazon, which is crazy, but I'm like, what do you get? Google asbestos lab test, testing.
Yeah, that's like the time my friends found what they thought was a meteor or a meteorite. What's it mean when it like makes it to Earth? Is that a meteorite?
I think so.
They found one, so they like, they just looked in the phone book for like science, local science labs. Yeah, actually, like, the guy was like, yeah, come on, bring it on. We'll look at it.
Holy and he was like, crap.
It's not a meteorite. I don't know.
He's like, get out of my lab.
But that was like...
You kids, every day.
It's like the weirdest thing that anyone I ever knew, like, just like, looked in the yellow pages for, you know.
Yeah.
Science right. Lab.
Bring it on by. He said.
Yeah, bring it on by.
This episode of Tales from the Crypt, The Assassin, is about a couple who's having a great life, seemingly.
Just, yeah, your normal suburban man and wife, just bliss, wedded bliss. Man goes off to work, wife comes home from grocery shopping, and there's a lady, there's Chelsea Field in her kitchen, claiming to be a police officer, wanting to ask her husband some questions. Our wife isn't buying it. And quickly they reveal themselves to be a little, they're not exactly police officers, but right. They're from the company, Dale. I did appreciate them using that slang because that's something you do not hear nowadays, the company. I just heard that in some other movie I watched and I was like, man, we got to bring that back. When you refer to the CIA as the company, it's great.
Oh.
It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's legit.
It's like, what did they used to call the mob? Like a... The syndicate or something like that.
The syndicate.
That's what they used to call it, like in the 60s.
So yeah, they hold the wife hostage and we're like, we are not leaving this place until your husband comes home. He was an assassin for the company and we're here to kill him.
Yeah, he disappeared.
He disappeared.
We're here to bring him home, AKA put him in the ground. Clean it up.
They're like, he obviously changed his face. That's how he gets around. But we found from dental records. Mm-hmm. That we know this is our guy.
And all through this, you're getting a clinic from Mike Armantrout, Chelsea Field, and Clarence Feldman just doing their best. I don't know what they're like, off-Broadway, three-person play, rapid fire, jokes a minute.
Yeah.
It was nauseating.
You hated it.
I didn't enjoy it.
Plot twist. So the wife does what she can to stay alive. You know, she's she acts like she's the helpless housewife, and Corey Feldman takes her in the basement to put her down, and she gets out of it. You know, through some mishaps,
yeah.
She still seemingly it appears that you know she got out of it, and he gets you know because she presents herself as being possible
available
availability. For Corey and
yeah, and once Corey got it, he got the smell of blood in the water. He couldn't.
Yeah, right. He started to think with his other head.
Yeah,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets out of it, and she starts attacking the other one of the lady comes down to check on the progress of murdering the housewife, Janet, and you know Janet has Corey's gun. They get in a little firefight, and she gets out of that, too. She goes back upstairs to find Jonathan Banks setting up for the dismembering of the eventual husband.
Mm-hmm.
Kills him.
On the toity. That was a good kill. That was, like, the best moment was her shoving her heel. She had her heeled shoe in her hand and shoved it in Mike Armentrout's eyes, his eye.
Yeah, that was...
And then the toilet flushed, which I did appreciate that sound effect.
Right. And I was, you know, he was in there just waiting.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was taking a crap until, you know, the bottom of the camera, you see his hairy thigh. And I said, he was wearing pants when he walked in here. So
yeah.
He was taking a poop.
Mm-hmm. They really could have played up that joke a little more.
Yeah.
Because that was like a blink if you miss it, you know, blink and you miss it.
And the way that these three chuckle hutters were carrying the episode.
Oh, yeah.
It could have had some legs to it.
Now, and the one thing they skipped over, which I love whenever they skip over a special effect, and I'm like, I bet it just didn't work, you know? Because I'm sure they shoot these things in like a day or two, and like, you know, if they don't get it, they don't get it. And that, so like the Chelsea Field picks up the gun that went into the paint can, which was a weird thing that somehow the gun broke through the paint can lid.
Lid.
So the paint can was stuck on the end of this gun. And like, you know, what we don't see is her shooting it. And I guess shrapnel going everywhere in her hand is all bloody.
But.
Yes.
It makes me also think that it was premeditated. It looked awkward. It was very awkward.
That's it. Yeah.
It was very, you like, I was like, why would they focus on her putting the gun into the little paint can? That's so stupid. And, you know, and then by her choice of doing that, the gun backfires when the killer grabs it.
Yeah.
But it was premeditated. Along with when she ripped her heel off to jam it in Jonathan Banks' eyes.
Yes.
Because the husband is not the assassin.
Yeah.
The wife.
The wife is the assassin.
It was the wife.
It was her all along. She's playing dress up.
Yeah.
Or he's playing dress up.
Finkel is Einhorn. You know?
Exactly.
I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it, Chuck.
Did you love the episode?
I did. Oh, I loved
fuck
it.
Fuck me.
It was good.
You let me trash that for 20 minutes until you're like, I liked it.
Yeah. Now you're exposed to the world.
Wow.
You butthole. No, I don't care if you hated it. If you hated it, you hated it. It's fine. Yeah, I didn't see it coming when she starts talking like a man. I was like, oh my God, you got me.
But that voice they picked, I was not a fan of that voice. It sounded insane.
But that's the voice that matches the photo of the person when he used to be a man.
I recognize that voice. I mean, I couldn't tell you who it was, but here he is, Cam Clark. He played Ronald as the voice.
He looks like a Sherpa in this thumbnail.
He's Kaneda's voice on Akira. That's probably how I know him.
Oh, cool.
He's also Leonardo and Rocksteady and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like the cartoon. I knew I recognized that voice.
Voice actors, man, they just get...
They're everywhere.
They have long-lived careers. They just make a living. How can we get a voice actor on this episode to interview on this show?
I don't know.
On the Tales from the Crypt presents Crypt Keeper's Coffin show, specifically.
I interacted with a voice actor once. I met a couple.
No, you didn't.
I did. And I worked at this movie trailer company where they cut movie trailers, and they would always need voice actors coming in the building to just like read lines off in our little recording booth we had. And
yes, say it.
And I remember the one guy, like, I don't even think it was him. I think it was like one of my coworkers explained it. Like, he is so in demand. Like, he just drives around LA all day long going to different places to record.
Wow. Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Just like. You imagine that? Like,
is it John DiMaggio?
I don't know.
Was
I don't
that him? His name. Was Chuck, did you see John DiMaggio in your...
I did see the guy who did, I think he did Brain's voice on Pinky and the Brain. He came in once.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good guess.
I think he was wearing a Pinky and the Brain hat. So, you know, he was horny.
He was horny for
everyone to know.
he was horny for everybody to know. Yeah, there's only one explanation for that. You need somebody to ask you about that hat.
Oh, you know he's in the produce aisle like 3-4 hours a day trying to pick up the ladies with his Pinky and the Brain Hat.
Yeah, yeah, right. Oh, my God. Oh, crap. Also, explain to me William Sadler's Grim Reaper in this. Is William Sadler's agent and William just like, this is going to be a franchise. This Grim Reaper is going to be everywhere. And we got to get him out there outside of the Bill and Ted Bogus Journey.
Did they find a loophole? Was the death character from Bill and Ted's not trademarked? And they're like, man, we could take this shit on the road. We don't need those Bill and Ted nerds.
Is the whole concept of the Grim Reaper public domain, no matter what?
Yeah, maybe. You know? Maybe they could just get away with it, even though him in that makeup and, you know, we know exactly what he's from. But yeah, maybe.
It's the same accent. He's not he just doesn't happen to be playing a Grim Reaper in another episode. And he's in the bookends, which is where they're going to plug and advertise, which they're starting to do, especially this season. They're leaning in on advertising. Oh, yeah. But what is happening?
I don't know. I mean, it was my favorite part of the episode because, I mean, it was pretty well written because you get like, it starts with William Sadler as the Grim Reaper just rambling on. Yeah. So he's playing the part of like an annoying guest in the Crypt Keeper's house. And we hear this inner monologue of the Crypt Keeper, like the camera pans over to the Crypt Keeper and he's like, oh, this guy is so boring. He never shuts up. And I was dying.
Yeah. The Grim Reaper says, I didn't tell you yet why I'm here. Yeah. And the Crypt Keepers like to drink my wine and eat my food.
But the fucking, nothing gets past the Grim Reaper though. Cause like when he was pouring him more champagne, he was like, so who are you saving the good champagne for? And the Crypt Keeper just like,
that was amazing.
That was pretty good acting from that puppet. He was like caught. It was like a deer in headlights for a second.
Yeah, that was a good dig, man. William Sadler, you mensch.
So good.
I just need to know. I need to know if there's maybe a William Sadler biography.
Oh, man. I know.
Like a chapter devoted to the Grim Reaper character and how he just put himself out there.
Yeah. Like was this?
In different things.
Was this going to be the stepping stone for him being the Grim Reaper in other things?
Right, because you got you got your 4 minutes on Tales from the Crypt as you're stepping out of the movie, and now
it's kind of like testing the waters too, probably to see if he would get sued, see if he would bring any heat. You know, we get away with this, maybe we can get away with printing up some Grim Reaper T-shirts, putting them in the local Macy's for the kids. You know,
maybe he's on Letterman.
Oh yeah,
does bits on Letterman. You know.
Stupid Grim Reaper tricks, something.
Something, yeah. It could be anything.
Oh, man.
I love it.
Maybe the heat was brought. You know, this was the last thing.
Maybe the buck stopped there.
Tighten the old buns, you know what I'm saying? Good buns to tighten, too. I got some tight buns. You should feel them. Go ahead, grab them. It's all right.
Next episode.
Yeah, Dale, hit me.
Next episode is, I'm just staring, I'm sorry, I got caught up.
Oh,
Chuck, you're gonna, Chuck, I had to stop the
is presses. That who I think it is?
There. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Next episode, Stared in Horror.
All right.
Fugitive Clyde's on the lam from an angry mob. He seeks refuge in a decrepit old mansion owned by an elderly woman. Unbeknownst to Clyde, the house has a curse attached.
All right. Sold.
Say it.
Say it.
I mean, so you got D.B. Sweeney in it. Uh-huh. Fine. You know, America's heartthrob for a time. But Melina from Total Recall. Are we watching this movie? Are we watching this episode right now live for
at least skipping podcast? All the Melina parts.
Melina.
Rachel. How do you pronounce that name? Tocotin.
And the director has done just a buttload of stuff. Stephen Hopkins. He's done Nightmare on Elm Street 5, Predator 2, Judgment Night.
Oh, wow. He, I mean, for Predator 2 alone, he gets a He gets a lifetime pass from me.
The Ghost in the Darkness. Hello. Oh, we've already done. This is actually our third The Hat Trick by Stephen Hopkins. He's been in two previous episodes. We've directed two previous episodes.
Oh, okay.
So we've already talked about this fella. Welcome back, Stephen
Hopkins.
Welcome
back, Stephen Hopkins. God, I want to see more pictures of Melina.
I know.
There's not enough pictures on IMDb.
Melina.
Melina. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun, no matter what.
And Arlie Ermey. How could we forget? Arlie Ermey.
We forget. Does he play military personnel in this?
Plays sheriff.
That's okay. Yeah. Okay. Small town, old decrepit house.
So
that
he's
works.
He's stretching a little bit, but still within the realm of what he does. Why you call him? Is he? I mean, do you think there's a possibility he might be yelling in a stern voice in this one? Yeah. That's the real question.
Yeah, that's a good. Good question. That is something we should put money on. Find out.
God.
Yeah.
All right. Good night, kids.
Good night, guys. Love
you. See you next time. Love you. Bye.
Bite who? Who's Ronnie?
I said mommy. Bite mommy.
I haven't seen Bogus Journey in a long time, but he sounded like he was leaning into like a Dracula accent a little bit for his Grim Reaper.
Yeah, it certainly sounded like they were still, you know, he was still trying to find his character's voice. Even after, you know, he wasn't completely happy in the movie, so he's trying that here.
Maybe so as not to get in trouble, he switched to a different Eastern European accent.
Maybe that's it, to avoid any sort of ire from the studios.
When the president of Orion calls him, right. He can be like, I'll stop you right there. Switched accents.
Yeah.
And all that makeup fell on me. I walked under a white paint bucket on set.
Right.
You're going to put us against that wall, William. We do good work, and this is what you do. This is how you repay Orion.